Willie Mays Akins has done a lot of living in his 57 years. Now a hitting instructor for the Royals, Akins became the first major leaguer in history to hit two home runs in a single game twice in the same World Series, which he accomplished for the Royals back in 1980. Those were the good times. The bad times were to follow, with what he called his drinking and drugging days that included stints in the Mexican Baseball League and 14 years in federal prison for selling 50 grams of crack cocaine to an undercover officer. The Royals have given him a second chance, and Willie Mays Akins these days has a second lease on life and is the subject of a new biography, Willie Mays Akins, Safe at Home by Gregory Jordan. And Willie is here, safe in our studios, and welcome.
Good morning, Steve. How's it going?
So good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Well, looking over the arc of your life, Willie, you've done, as I said, a lot of living for 57 years. Does it feel like you've had a lifetime or maybe two or three lifetimes?
Not really. You know, the life that I've lived for the most part, I've enjoyed it. I mean, if I made a list and wrote down the good and the good would outweigh the bad. You know, that period of 14 years in my life, it was a growing experience for me. I don't think it took 14 years of being incarcerated for me to make a change in my life. But I've said it before and I'll say it again, that if I'm not taken out of that situation when I was in my house smoking that pipe, I probably wouldn't be here today. So all in all, you know, I wouldn't say doing 14 years was a blessing, but taking me out of that situation was definitely a blessing.
How did prison change you? What did you gain from that experience, Willie?
Well, I was able to gain, most importantly, I think, a spiritual life. You know, when I went in, I was 40 years old. I accepted Jesus Christ as my personal Savior when I was 13. I was talking the talk, but I wasn't walking the walk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even while I was a professional baseball player, I took a Bible with me every place I went, and I read the Bible. But I didn't really understand at that time what it meant to live a Christian life. I believe everybody have the Holy Spirit that lives inside of them. And for me, the Holy Spirit is that little voice that talks to us when we are getting ready to make choices, decisions in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And if that voice is not strong enough, well, then most of us don't pay that voice any attention. At least for me, I didn't. And it allowed me to make bad choices, whereas now I have a spiritual life. And, you know, I still make bad choices in my life, but at least when that voice say, Willie, don't do that, I stop and I think about it now. And the end result most of the time is that I don't do anything stupid now. And it's because of that little voice inside of me.
But you said a minute ago that if it hadn't been for federal prison, you're not sure you'd be sitting here talking to me today.
Exactly.
Because why?
Well, I had no plans of stopping what I was doing at that time.
And I was smoking.
I was getting high every single day, smoking cocaine. I was drinking. I was having sex with all different types of females. When I first became incarcerated, I was afraid to be examined, to have an AIDS test. Because I honestly thought that I was in some type of danger of having caught something from all the females that I used to sleep with. And after 5 years of being incarcerated, I finally had one, and it came back negative. And that was a blessing for me because I was afraid. And I was living a destructive lifestyle, not only doing drugs but hanging out with criminals, people that had been incarcerated. And just doing stupid stuff that could have taken my life at any period. You know, if you look back and you look at some of the celebrities in general that have died, Michael Jackson recently, Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
You know, those people passed away because of the lifestyle that they were living, doing drugs and alcohol.
We're visiting with Willie Mays Akins, a coach for the Royals. You know, Willie, you said you were smoking every day. You were high even during that famous 1980 World Series. The Royals lost that series, but you had an incredible series that year. But you were high when you were doing it.
Well, 1980 was basically the first year that I started doing cocaine. And at the time, I was a snorter. And snorting cocaine doesn't affect you the same way as smoking. The intensity level when you start smoking is a lot more intense. So when I was starting cocaine back in 1980, I still was able to go out on the baseball field and perform. And my lifestyle back then, a social lifestyle, was, you know, going out partying and drinking, doing cocaine. And I wasn't the only one. I've said it before and I'll say it again, that I knew somebody on every baseball team that came into town that was doing cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And
didn't it affect your performance at the plate?
Well, 1983, I had my best year. I hit .302,
yeah,
23 home runs, and drove in over 80 runs. In 1983, I did more cocaine than I did in 82 and 81. So to be honest, it didn't, and it's kind of deceiving in a way, because I don't want to think that cocaine helped my performance out on the baseball field, mm-hmm. and I don't believe it did. But I wasn't doing it to the point, whereas when I came to the ballpark, I was still high or drunk or anything like that.
You weren't high or drunk?
No, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I never did cocaine at the ballpark. I always did it after the game. And you know, I always had that period whereas I could recuperate, even though I used to sleep until 2 or 3 in the afternoon, get up and eat, and go straight to the ballpark. So mm-hmm. cocaine was still inside of my system when I got to the ballpark. But it wasn't in my system to the point whereas it affected my performance out on the baseball field.
Well, what got you going on cocaine to begin with? How did it start? Because you talk about it in the book.
Well, in 1979, while I was playing for the California Angels, I was introduced to cocaine by two of my teammates. You know, they offered me a line, and I did it. And at the time, I didn't really think anything of it. But when I got traded over here to the Kansas City Royals, I found out it was maybe three or four guys on the team at the time that was doing cocaine. And I got into it. And I just looked at it as a social lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
1981, myself and five other guys on the team met this guy over in Overland Park, Kansas. And one of the players introduced me to this guy. And he said, "Willie, if you'd like to get a high, I know this guy, and I've been going over to his house, and he's bringing the drug out on plates. And he's a baseball fan."
And well, he actually, again, it's in the book, he came out, I think the first time you were there, holding a platter above his head, and I think he said, "What, dinner is served, or you know, here it comes," right?
No,
you know, a whole platter full.
No doubt about that. And, you know, cocaine is a progressive illness somewhat. Your body builds up a tolerance against it. And you have to start doing more and more in order to feel it. And that's what happened with us, you know.
At what point in your life did it become so addictive that it was beginning to cause problems in your personal life, and maybe your professional life, too?
I stayed clean and sober after 1983 for about 3 years. Because remember, I was one of the first active Major League Baseball players to go to prison.
Yeah.
Along with three of my teammates.
Vida Blue,
Willie Wilson, and Jerry Martin.
Jerry Martin, yeah.
This is a public thing, so I'm not mm-hmm. talking right. about anything that's not already known. I got traded to the Blue Jays, and I was up there for about a year and a half, and I got released. And after that, I couldn't find a job here in the United States.
Were you blackballed at that point, Willie?
I believe I was, and not only from my drug use, even though that was a factor. But while I was doing drugs in Kansas City, Dick Houser became the manager, and Dick started platooning me. I was only playing against right-handed hitters.
You had trouble hitting lefties, at least that's what he said.
Well, I did. I had mm-hmm. probably had like a .220 batting average mm-hmm. against lefties. But I had become an established Major League Baseball player at that time. And my thinking was this, and it's really stupidity on my part. And when I talk to the young baseball players today, this is one point that I try to get across to them, that always respect your manager. Even though if you don't like the decision that he is making, go ahead and do it. Because later on in your baseball career, this could hurt you, man.
If you have a bad reputation with this guy, if you don't get along, that word can get out and circulate among other major league managers, and they won't want you come trade time then.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's what happened with Dick Houser and me, that the word got out that I was a troublemaker. And, you know, if you've had some kind of decent baseball career, later on you can just stick around two or three years because you are a good guy in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But with me, that didn't happen.
Well, so you left the Blue Jays. They let you go. And then you wound up in the Mexican League. And one of the years there, you had a great season. Hit a lot of home runs, hit 400-plus batting average, I think. But then that became your rearview mirror, and you ended up getting arrested. Tell us how that came down.
Well, this is when I really found out that I was blackballed. I went to Mexico my first year, and I hit 454.
Yeah.
I still own the batting average record down there today.
Really?
I hit 46 home runs and drove in 154 runs. And I couldn't find a job here in the United States. Then a Japanese team sent a representative to Mexico.
They wanted to pay you big money.
And I negotiated a contract for $300,000. And when it came time for me to get a visa to enter their country, I couldn't get one because of the misdemeanor conviction that I had on my record. So after that particular time, I decided to make a decision that, hey, if I want to get high, I'm going to get high. So I started using cocaine again. And not only was I snorting, I started to smoke that pipe. And smoking the pipe is a lot more intense. And once you start doing it, it's really hard to leave it alone. And there were games down in Mexico. I would be up all night, man, and I would take my last hit at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and go to the ballpark. And I hadn't had any sleep or anything, and I still would go out on the baseball field and perform. 1991 was my last year down there. I had some problems here in Kansas City. I ended up getting on probation, and I asked the judge if I could leave the country and go back to Mexico, and he said no. So I really didn't care at that particular time anyway. I was enjoying what I was doing, and that was getting high. So another incident happened at my house, and the Kansas City Police Department started doing an investigation on me, and they finally sent an undercover officer in, and I got drugs for her 4 times. And after they got it over 50 grams in the federal system, it used to be 100-to-1 crack to powder cocaine. It's changed since. It's 18-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
But I was facing a mandatory minimum 10 years. So they came in and kicked my house in and took me to jail, arrested me.
And that began the rest of your life, in a sense, that moment right there.
Well, they offered me a plea agreement at first of 5 years. I turned that down. They wanted me to help catch the guys that I knew. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. 2 weeks before I went to trial, they offered me 9 years. I turned that down. My lawyer said, Willie, if you go to trial and lose, you're going to get twice as much time. I went to trial and lost and received a sentence of 20 years and 8 months. And that was the beginning of those 14 years.
20 years, Willie. When that sentence came down, what did you think?
Well, I knew I had to find some kind of way to get out of this situation. And you know, it's just something inside of us that allows us to call on the name of the Lord when we have a tragedy in our life. And that's why I believe we are fleshly beings, but we are also spiritual beings. So after 2 years of being incarcerated, I dedicated my life to Jesus Christ. And I didn't do it because I was trying to make changes in my life. I did it because I had that 20-year sentence. And I wanted God to help get that 20-year sentence off of me. But for the next 10 or 12 years, I started to grow spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
I started to hang out with Christians. I started to read my Bible more. I started to go to church. And when that started to happen, I started to grow spiritually. I joined 2 rehabilitation programs while I was incarcerated. And I started to find out stuff about my life. And I really blamed that undercover officer for 2 years while I was incarcerated,
mm-hmm.
for me being in prison. And I finally came to a point where as I had to accept responsibility for what I had done, I finally found out that the foundation of my problems wasn't the undercover officer, that it was me. And once I accepted responsibility for what I had done, I was finally able to make changes in my life.
It's time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Willie Mays Akins. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about teens and bullying, you'll find that plus all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, one woman who wants to punch quite a few people in the throat and writes about it online. It's a conversation about blogging and internet privacy, plus Brian McTavish and the weekend to-do list. Well, this hour we're speaking with former Royals first baseman Willie Mays Akins. You might remember him from his record-setting performance in the 1980 World Series. After stints in the Mexican Baseball League and 14 years in federal prison for selling 50 grams of crack cocaine to an undercover officer, the Royals have given him a second chance, and Willie Mays Akins is the subject of a new biography titled Willie Mays Akins, Safe at Home. Tell us about your life right now, Willie. How good a place are you in today?
Well, for the past 3 days, you know, I've had a great time.
About the book.
Exactly. I've done three book signings. I was over at the ballpark Saturday, I think it was, for about 3 or 4 hours signing books. And every comment that I've received so far has been positive.
Hmm.
It really has, man.
From the fans.
From the fans.
You didn't always have such a good relationship with the fans. You talk about that in the book.
Exactly. No, I didn't. When I first came over here in 1980, I had just had knee surgery. And I struggled the first half of the baseball season.
Fielding ground balls was tough.
Yeah, and I used to get booed a lot, man. I did. But the second half, I won the hearts of the fans. And then in that World Series, hitting those four home runs, really turned everything around for me, man. But after being incarcerated for 14 years, you know, people, they kind of have a stigma about themselves, and they label people, which is okay, you know. It was my fault. But
you're saying people are pretty embracing of you now.
They are. And I'm surprised.
Are you? I was just going to ask. Yeah.
I'm surprised. Mainly because, you know, when you live in this world, you have the negative and the positive. And I haven't heard anything negative about what has happened in my past. And
was there a sense when you were playing for the Royals that fans expected more from you than you were able to give, at least right away because of the knee? But even throughout your time here, that people just expected more from you somehow on the field?
Well, when you struggle the way I struggle, of course they expected more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't living up to what I was capable of doing. I had just got traded from the California Angels. In 379 at-bats, less than 400 at-bats, I hit 21 home runs and drove in 81 runs. So that's a pretty good season.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got traded over here, the fans, the front office for the Kansas City Royals expected me to play well.
Mm-hmm.
And when it didn't happen, they got upset about it. But one thing I can say about our manager at that time, Jim Frey, you know, he was only here for like a year and a half.
He hung with you pretty well.
Oh, he did, man.
Very supportive of Willie Mays Akins.
Most of the time when a player struggles like that for the first half of the season, he goes to the bench and he don't play. But Jim Frey stuck with me and he gave me a chance to play. And I really appreciated that.
To what extent has your career been sort of haunted by the idea of your name? Willie Mays Akins. You were named after the great Willie Mays, the ball player. In fact, you were born in 54, not long after Willie Mays made that famous over-the-shoulder catch in the World Series in the Polo Grounds, I think. And that's a pretty big name to try to live up to year after year after year.
And, you know, I've always wanted to make a name for myself. And when the public announcer used to call me that during the games, I used to hate that man.
Willie Mays Akins.
Willie Mays Akins.
As opposed to Willie Akins.
Exactly. And, you know, that thought would just come in my head. Why is he doing that, you know? You know, I'm not the other guy, even though, you know, he's a Hall of Fame baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make a name for myself. And I need to straighten that thing out about me being named after him. From what I understand, I was named after my Uncle Willie. And the doctor that delivered me, his last name was Mays.
Oh.
So that's... I don't know if it's a coincidence that I was born in 1954 when he made that great catch in the World Series and I became a professional baseball player. That is kind of weird, huh? But, hey.
But you've embraced it since because on the book jacket, it's Willie Mays Akins.
There it is. And I'm kind of hoping that some of the fans might mistake me for the the Hall of Famer so I can sell some more books. A lot of books, yeah.
Yeah. How is your family doing these days? Because I know your wife had a difficult pregnancy a few years ago and suffered a stroke. How is she today?
She's still struggling.
Mm-hmm.
She's still doing physical therapy. She's somewhat paralyzed on her right side. Her arm is paralyzed. She's able to walk with a cane. She's able to feed herself. She's able to bathe. But we have a 50-month-old daughter, and she's not really able to help me with her at all.
Mm-hmm.
And right now she's with her mom. We are separated. So I've just come to the conclusion that if God doesn't heal her and allow her to come back to herself, and a lot of times with situations like this here, a person, you know, they stay like that. They are paralyzed for the rest of their lives. So we just have to cope with the situation the way it is. If she doesn't get any better, and I'll probably just have to hire a nanny or somebody, because I made a decision that I saw my daughter 3 weeks ago, and she didn't even recognize who I was because I haven't seen her in a couple of months. I've been out in Arizona
with the Royals in spring training. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was crying and she didn't want to come to me. And I've made a decision that this is the last year that I'm going to go through this. I'm going to hire a nanny or somebody that can travel with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taking my family with me because my first two daughters, when I went to prison, they were 5 and 6 years old. And when I got out, they were 19 and 20. So they got a chance to know me, but they didn't really get a chance to know me on a personal level.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't there for them. So I'm not going to let the same thing happen with my baby girl, man. I'm not.
Willie, why do you think the Royals gave you a second chance to come back to the organization a couple of years ago and coach?
You know, I was talking yesterday at the Negro Museum.
Yeah.
And somebody else asked me that same question. And my answer was this, that I truly believe that God has touched a whole lot of people's hearts and allowed them to make a decision towards me, even though it was up to these people in the first place. And I just want to say, and I've said it before, that I want to thank the Glass family, Dayton Moore in the front office for the Kansas City Royals, for giving me an opportunity to be back in baseball again.
But they brought you back. Why? Because you obviously can teach players about hitting, but you offer something else too, some good stuff about life experience, I assume.
And you know, when I was a player, we never had anybody that went around and talked to the players about drugs and alcohol, about, you know, things that happen off the baseball field. And it's really a great opportunity for me. Because when I talk to the young kids, one of the first things I tell them is that, hey, baseball is a privilege, and that my baseball career was cut short because of the choices that I made off the baseball field. And you don't want to take this thing for granted, because once it's gone, it's gone. And it's so hard in the first place to be a professional baseball player, and it's even harder to get to the major leagues like I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got there, so I know what it's like. And I just try to tell these guys that, hey, before you make a stupid decision, think about it, man. Think about it 5 or 10 seconds. And if that thought comes in there that something bad could happen to you, don't do it. And I'm just blessed to have an opportunity to try and help somebody change their life or help them stay on the right road.
You know, the fact that your Major League Baseball career was cut short by your own decisions that you're talking about today, your own drug use, Willie. How often do you think about that? When you walk into the stadium every day, or how often does it come into your mind? What could have been?
Not too much now. You know, I know that's in the past, so I don't want to live in the past. You know, I'm just thankful for the things that I have today. One of the times when it does come up is when I receive my baseball pension each month. I know that if I had stuck around for maybe 3 more years, I would have got the minimum 10 years in, and I would be receiving the maximum benefit. And when I see some of the alumni guys, George Brett, Frank White, Willie Wilson, Dennis Liddon, John Mayberry. You know, we do clinics together sometime. Mm-hmm. And those guys got over 10 years in. And they're in the Royals Hall of Fame right now. Mm-hmm. So when I'm associating with those guys, those times, you know, I think about, because I'm like, well, if I had stayed here in Kansas City for 8 to 10 years, I would be in the same position that those guys are in. But I can't go back and change anything. So I just praise God for the life that I have right now.
You know, again, we're visiting with Willie Mays Akins, the Royals coach and the former Royals first baseman. You mentioned Frank White and George Brett. Those guys were pretty good to you in the years even after you had left the Royals. Tell us about that.
They still are good to me. When I first got out of prison, George Brett was the first person that I got in contact with. I was at the halfway house, and he invited me to go over to his son's high school to speak to those kids.
Shawnee Mission East.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I went over there and spoke for 45 minutes. And after I finished speaking, George walked up to me, and he said, Mick is my nickname. He said, how did you do that? He said, you didn't have any paper in front of you or anything. And most importantly, you didn't stutter. You know, the last time I was with George when I played in the major leagues, I had a speech impediment. And I'm not saying that I'm the best speaker right now, but I have been improved a lot from that stutter. Mm-hmm. And he was totally impressed with that. And George, one of the things George told me, he said, Mick, guys in baseball need to hear your story. He said, I'm going to take you over and let you meet the general manager, Dayton Moore, for the Kansas City Royals. And he did that. And that's how I first came in contact with Dayton Moore.
That's a pretty good friend, Willie.
Yep. No doubt about that, man.
He could have walked away easily.
Yeah, he could have. And he didn't have to answer my telephone call when I called him. Or he could have answered, and he could have said, well, Mick, I'm busy right now. I don't have time to talk to you. But George Brett, he didn't do that. I mean, George has been a tremendous influence on my life since I've been out of prison. He really has.
You know, someone else who could have been a tremendous influence was a former teammate of yours, a former Royals manager, Hal McRae. And there's a scene in the book when you're on an airplane going from one city to another. The team's not doing very well. I believe it's 1981. It's the year after the World Series year. And Hal McRae calls you back to sit down next to him. And you describe that moment as being something akin to a principal calling a student in for a difficult talk about his grades or whatever. And Hal McRae, you know, looked out the window of the plane and then looked at you and said, Willie, you know, we've had enough here. You've got to straighten this thing out. You've got to quit hanging out with the people you're hanging out with. He knew what you were doing. He told you to stop, and you didn't. Why not, even after a talk like that?
Well, that wasn't the first time that had happened, because the FBI came and talked to us, the team as a whole. And during that meeting, the FBI called out some of the players that was going over to this guy's house in Kansas getting high. In other words, they knew who was going over to this guy's house. So after that meeting, I walked up to Hal, and I told Hal what had just happened. And I asked Hal, you know, do you think they know what's going on? And he told me right then and there, he said, Willie, if you're one of those players doing that, you better stop doing it. Because if you don't, something bad is going to happen to you. So this was probably the second or third time on that airplane.
Why wasn't that enough? Someone like Hal McRae, sort of the disciplinarian of the Kansas City Royals, calling you out and telling you to stop.
You know, that's the amazing thing about us as human beings. Or I'll use myself, that's the amazing thing about me. You know, having that there right in the opening and knowing that what I'm doing is against the law. And there's something inside of my thinking allows me to think that I can't continue to do what I'm doing and I'm not going to get caught. And I really don't know why I continued to do what I was doing. I guess those thoughts was, well, I'm a professional baseball player. If I get in any trouble, I'm going to be able to get out of it. So I can continue doing what I was doing. And not only myself, but my other teammates, they continued to do what they were doing too.
Yeah.
So we didn't feel like we was doing anything wrong. We were just partying, having a good time. But we was breaking the law.
I'm visiting with Willie Mays Akins. He's the subject of a new biography, Willie Mays Akins, Safe at Home. It's a book written by Gregory Jordan. Remember, we're talking here about people who have stepped into your life at different times and given you a hand. There's someone else in this book. It really surprised me a little bit, and it really stuck out to me. I think it was in 1980, your World Series year with the Royals. The early part of the year, as you mentioned, you were struggling a little bit. And you were playing a team that featured Frank Robinson on it. And, you know, one day, you know, you two got to talking around the batting cage, and you began to ask Frank some questions about how your hitting stroke was going. And it was interesting because Frank's an opposing player, but he still began to talk to you a little bit about, hey, I noticed you doing this. You should be doing this. And he really helped turn you around. Tell us about that moment.
Well, most people don't know that I had met Jim Fry, Earl Weaver, Brooke Robinson, Frank Robinson, all those guys. I met those guys back in 1974. I was playing up in Baltimore for an amateur team called Johnny's.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working a construction job. I was playing the general manager of the team. He was a scout for the Baltimore Orioles at the time. And I would work all day. And after work, we would play our games. But on days that we didn't have games, he would take me over to Memorial Stadium, and I was a catcher. And I used to catch batting practice for the Baltimore Orioles. And after I was finished catching batting practice, they would let me get in the cage and take some swings. And I came three rows from hitting one out of Memorial Stadium. And the old saying is that Frank Robinson is the only person that has ever hit one completely out of the stadium. Mm-hmm. So I already had somewhat of a relationship with Frank before I became a professional baseball player. And you know, when you are struggling, and Frank Robinson was one of the most outstanding hitters ever in baseball.
Oh, incredible.
So I just went over and started talking to him and asking him for advice about, hey, if you see me doing anything wrong during the game, could you tell me about it? And
what were you doing wrong? What did he tell you?
Well, probably the most important thing he told me was that I was probably thinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what happened to players that go into slumps. They try to figure out what they're doing, and they have all of these thoughts inside of their heads instead of just going up to the plate and letting your natural ability take over.
I think a lot of members of the Kansas City Royals are having that problem right now with their 10-game hitting losing streak that is occurring as we speak here today.
And when you get in a losing streak or when you're in a batting slump, that's what happens to you. They've also, some of the hitters have had some bad luck, especially Eric or Hosmer. You know, he's hit some balls well recently.
Right at somebody. Though.
There you go. And you know, that's a part of baseball, and you can't do anything like that. And when you go in a slump, that kind of stuff happens. Hopefully, eventually, hey, these guys have an outstanding team, man. And I'm totally surprised that, you know, they have lost 10 straight games and so forth.
But how much natural talent does Eric Hosmer have, in your view, Willie?
Well, he has the talent to become a superstar. I mean, he runs well, he throws well, he a 5-2 player. He really
Meaning?
Does. That he does everything well. He throws well.
5-tool player, right?
Five twos.
Yeah.
Hit, feeling, throwing, everything.
You know, in 1980, when we were just talking about your meeting with Frank Robinson, you wound up hitting those two home runs twice in the 80 World Series, and that set the major league record. Never been done before. Did you know that at the time?
No, I didn't. And I don't think most people that was watching that game knew it either. Before the World Series started, I had heard through one of our scouting reports that the Philadelphia Phillies was going to throw me fastballs inside. You know, it's a lot easier to hit when you don't have to guess, when you know what's coming. So my first plate appearance, I took the first pitch, and it was a fastball inside. So that gave me some kind of idea how they was going to pitch me during the World Series. And the first two home runs I hit in the first game were fastballs out over the plate in somewhat. So I had somewhat of an idea how they was going to pitch me. But you still have to have to hit the ball. But to become the first player in over 100 years of Major League history to have multiple home games is a great accomplishment.
What's that like, hitting a home run in a World Series, Willie?
Well, getting to the World Series, first of all, is something that some of the greatest players in baseball
never get to,
have never done before. And, you know, as a ball player, my job is to go out and play and hit. So even though it was a World Series, I was just doing what I had done the whole year.
You didn't feel more pressure? You didn't feel more elation once you had hit the home run?
Once the game started, no. You know, it's just like playing a game during the regular season. And I had hit 20 home runs during the regular season, so I wasn't doing anything different than what I had done before. It was just something that came natural for me. But this time it was in the World Series. A special moment.
A really special moment.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Willie, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're doing well. It's a pleasure to have you here on Up to Date.
I want to thank Steve and your company here for having me here. I want to thank the fans of Kansas City for supporting me like they have. And most importantly, I want to thank God for the opportunity to still be here, to be back in baseball, to have a baby girl, to be a father, to have a chance to see her grow up from being a little baby to an adult. And I'm 57 years old right now. When she finished high school, I'll be 75 years old. Hopefully, I'll be in good shape still, you know, to be there for her, man. You know, it's a blessing for me. It really is.
All the best to you, Willie.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
That's Willie Mays Akins. His book is titled Willie Mays Akins, Safe at Home by Gregory Jordan.